Hello and welcome to Podcast on Fire, a very troublesome podcast so far. Tonight we're doing something awfully different. We're not actually podcasting, we're recording an audio commentary. And if you are a member of our forum, and you'll probably know what movie we're just about to comment on. But yeah, podcastonfire.com/forum. Get in the know. Right, so tonight we're actually doing a DVD commentary of Eastern Condors. This will be a right treat for the people who own the Hong Kong Legends DVD of Eastern Condors. Right, so joining me for this podcast this evening is Ken.
Hello, hello, representing exploitation and ninjas. Which begs the question, what the fuck am I doing here? Watching Eastern Condors?
Well, we'll do a ninja movie next time.
Okay.
And joining us once again is Mike Banner.
White.
For our audiences at home who's listening to us, now, hopefully you haven't pressed play already because this isn't the commentary so far. We're actually going to give you sort of a countdown. We're going to count down to three, then you have to press play the exact same time as us then. Right? On the count of three. One, two, three, click.
So, starting the movie, I guess we have time to mention one thing. The actual English dub version has a title card before the actual credit sequence that talks about all the weapons arsenals that are still left in Saigon, or were left in Saigon. And it all sounds very serious, but it ends on a following very amusing note. The following is an account of what could have happened. And then the movie starts in the English version, so there you go.
And we see the Boho production company logo coming up here. Boho being the mix of Sammo Hung-Kambo's and Leonard Ho's name. I think it's a running theme for Sammo to mix parts of his name in with his production companies.
Indeed. It was the same with D&B later on.
Yep. And our opening shot is of snowy Canada. I think it's credited in the movie as America, but I'm guessing Canada is the cheap man's America.
Well, as seen in Rumble in the Bronx, where they're supposed to be in New York, and you can clearly see mountains in the background. Classic bit of American Dublin.
It's Hong Kong. Yeah, so a little bit of back history on the film, still?
Let's see. The film did come out on the 7th of July in 1987. And strangely enough, only ran for 20 days. It was originally put down as a flop, only making $21 million at the box office, which is roughly 1.4 million quid. But that's 20 days worth, so it's surprising that it was a flop, despite featuring some of the finest action from Sammo, Yimbu and Yinhua. And obviously I think it's grown as a cult favourite now.
I think Samuel talked about the fact that war movies like this aren't necessarily what Hong Kong people can relate to, because they you know, war is not necessarily around them all the time. So He thought it was a challenge to actually complete a movie like this, a genre movie like this, and he felt very proud to actually have done it. Just a quick mention before, this scene that you're seeing with the flag that gets caught, that scene and the actual the second half of the scene that happens after the briefing here, that was actually cut from the English version because they probably felt that it was a bit too silly for a film to have later on Lan Chin-ying jump onto the flagpole and do some crazy stuff. So it actually ended up being cut out of the English version. As far as I know, nothing else was. So after that, the English version plays out just exactly like the Hong Kong version you're seeing. You have seen and seen now.
Mm-hmm. And of course, this is all archive footage of real things.
Really?
And now, let's see. On screen, we've got this old white guy here, but we'll leave Stephen Hammond stuff for later. The thing I noticed in this scene is almost like Lam Ching Ying is wearing lipstick.
And then
for some reason, he has strangely purple lips.
And that's what you're seeing after seeing the film 20, having seen the film 20 times? Is that the stuff you're noticing?
Yep, makeup.
But the other guy, who's the other guy?
Melvin Wong. Let's see. Melvin Wong, known to many as the bad guy in Right and Wrongs.
Do you guys know, I don't think he was formally trained, right? But he does look good in Writing Wrongs. You know, there's some doubling here and there, but, you know, his screen presence as a bad guy in Writing Wrongs combined with the fights that he does do, I think they were choreographed by Sammo partly. But am I right in saying he had no formal training? Do you guys know that?
Not as far as I know. And I do actually like to believe that Lam Ching Ying can climb poles.
Well, the people creating the English version probably did not believe that fact.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a Hong Kong movie. I mean, you do have to have these light and wacky things. You know what, before we go on, can I just ask you guys briefly, when you first watched this film, were you totally blown away by it?
Yes.
No.
Interesting that you say that, because I wasn't either. And the reason why, I bought the Made in Hong Kong VHS way, way back. And the blurb on the back sort of made it sound like it was the best war drama ever created. A genuine good action film, a genuine good drama, and everything well-rounded. I mean, at that time, I'd seen Bullet in the Head. So I was expecting something like that. And when I watched the film, this kind of sucks balls. It's a good action film. But it's canned melodrama. It threw me off because I believed the blurb on the back, and since then I learned to, you know, not read stuff like that. But you know what? In the end, you know, when I'm watching it nowadays, I think it's a damn good, entertaining action film. But as a drama, you won't sell me on the fact that it's a good character drama, because it isn't.
On screen now we have leading man Sammo Hung. It was a strange sort of read up here of each character, just how them being introduced by almost the weird computer effect on screen, bringing up their details, like what he done, what they done, and then it just kind of end with scenes I think were probably deleted scenes, like shots of Sammo there. I'm pretty sure there was a lot more included into that.
Yeah, it's a good thing you mentioned that. There's actually the Hong Kong cinema trailer has evidence of scenes from the opening of the film set in the prison where Sammo is beaten by guards and interacts with prisoners. And it also, there's a shot of a basketball game where Sammo flies in the air while scoring. So it seems like a very exaggerated sequence. According to what I read, the studio want this stuff cut for time. And, you know, I can't really blame them because the film isn't totally guideless, you know, without these scenes. But you do wish they could be dug out from somewhere and be included as extras, you know, on a DVD release. And but it's interesting that you say that, you know, it's quick introductions, you know, with the thing they printed on screen.
Yeah,
it really goes hand in hand with the fact that you don't really get to know these characters. Even, you know, when they die, you don't really know these characters, and that's why I was so disappointed initially, because this isn't a good war drama at all. It's cardboard figures, but you know, I've changed my mind since.
Mm-hmm.
But what was the reason you didn't like, didn't like the film, Mike?
I think probably just raised expectations, because in my Sammo Hung, you know, filmography that I've watched so far, it was relatively recent. I'd watched pretty much all his old school stuff and a lot of the modern things before I came to Eastern Condors, and so I kept reading about how great it was, and you know, his best film, etc., from a lot of people. And, yeah, I was a little bit disappointed. I mean, it's partially the same reason as you. It's a bit hackneyed. Especially if you've watched... I mean, maybe in Hong Kong, I don't know how they do for war films, guessing by how this did and what Sammo was saying. Not a lot, but in Europe, or you can't move on Sunday mornings in Britain, or bank holidays for a couple of war films. So I think this is rather hackneyed and generic in terms of storyline and plot and characterization.
But still extremely well made for that year. I mean, if you look at the production as such, I mean, Arthur Wong co-shot this film. Veteran cinematographer Arthur Wong, and it looks dynamite. And it's really more professional than, you know, some of Sammo's films in between the old school stuff. I mean, the likes of Prodigal Son, I rate as kind of well-made films as well, technically. I mean, there is some stuff in there. But I wouldn't think... I might be wrong, but because I haven't seen some of the Malaki Stars films and stuff, but they are very, very well shot, aren't they? They're kind of
typical Hong Kong film from the 80s.
Yeah, and compared to when you get to Eastern Condors, there must be a jump in quality, I reckon.
It's certainly a very well-made film, and there's some really hard action in it, but I wouldn't put it...
At least on a technical level.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
Introducing now our three, I would guess, leading ladies for the movie. Centre, we've got Joyce Scodenzi, who became a future wife of Sammo Hung in 1995. Her, almost like her meal ticket into fame was winning the Miss Hong Kong pageant in 1986.
Yeah.
See, unlike... you go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, she was apparently in a movie called Goofy Gang, which I had on my list to see, and I believe that there's a VCD out now, so I've always wanted to see that film. She was also in a movie I quite liked the year before called Ghost Snatchers, kind of a lame comedy / horror film directed by Nam Nai Choi, who did Seventh Curse, Story of Ricky and the Cat. So, but yeah, this was her transition to action, and Sammo really pushed her. Really pushed hard, and you know she looks good. I think she looks very good for basically her first action film.
And the flower girl we see here distracting the guys is Chu Man Yan. Most notable role is in The Raid. But what's it? One of the things they thought was awfully stunning about the film was the shocking violence towards women and the stabbing of anuses, as we just see.
By women.
There was people blaming the movie for excess violence towards women. Did they not see this scene to begin with, where three women basically own a dozen guys? Look, why?
And it probably was a muted, subtle portrayal of what actually went on, I guess, in the fields. Mm-hmm. You know, if they had gone further, then they probably would have had a high rating.
Mm-hmm.
And who's this annoying guy shouting? See, that guy with the glasses.
It's Choi Min-chuk. No, it's not. It's Billy Lau Nam Kwong. Sorry, I thought for a little Rick Myers at you there. The guy doesn't actually wear glasses in real life. He's got, like, treble vision. A third eye that you can't actually see.
I heard he was an optician in real life, Billy Lau.
As part-time.
Exactly. And you know, that goes in hand with the fact that acting is not a full-time gig that you can rely on. You have to have a backup plan or treat acting as a side profession and stuff. And Billy Lau, I don't have a favorable impression of him in barely any film that he's in. I mean, he's in some classic stuff. He's in Mr. Vampire. And you know, it fits, the role is such that he's supposed to be the annoying tit of the film. But unfortunately, it doesn't really, you know, I can't say too much positive things about Billy Lau.
Didn't he just kind of make his comeback more recently? I think he had an appearance in The Pie Dog?
A cameo in The Pie Dog, indeed. Which was fun to see. You know, you know, because the director of that film, Derek Kwok, probably wanted to have some old-timers in this film, just people he liked. So so he's in it for about a minute, but, you know, it's fun. It's fun to see.
Yeah.
But his best role, I have to reference, is a co-starring role in Ken Cheng's Mr. Smart, which is a very good film for both Ken Cheng and Billy Lau and Rosamund Kwan, which is a well-recommended film.
Now, I think the scene that we just saw here, what took place before Lam Ching Ying's conversation and now with them in the red light, was a gap of 3 hours.
Yeah,
it's like, we're talking about 3 hours.
Yeah, they were talking about having traveled for 3 hours, and I believe the guy to the left here, Chung Kuo Kwang, had calculated where they were.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually over Vietnam. An hour over Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up, I think, is a scene when I rewatched the film, the stuttering character is about to bite the dust here because he can't count to 20 without stuttering, and I'm in two minds whether or not that is a lame ass scene or something poignant dramatically. I can't really decide, or if it's tragic.
I think it's leaning more on the side of tragic. When watching the movie in preparation, this is probably the only moment where my girlfriend thought, that's quite sad, I feel sorry for him.
In a way, I think, is it that, you know, retarded to an extent that he can't count internally? But anyway, there's a thought behind that scene, but I've never really, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely lame ass.
It is a, you know, we're coming up to the first death, the problem, I think, with this film, partly in terms of its characters, I mean, most of the people die, not the Dirty Dozen, but the 10 Chinese soldiers, or other prisoners. Mm-hmm. The problem is that some of the guys that you want to live, because of their history as action performers, they just get killed very easily, or very casually. This guy, what's his name? Kali, was that it?
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in anything, so I don't have a connection to him, but guys like Chin Kalok and the Lao Galong protege, I guess, Xiao Hu, they die very easily in this film, unfortunately don't get a chance to shine, which is another reason why I don't like this film partially, because, you know, the choices to maybe it has a too big of a cast to actually make everyone look good.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to choose, like, you know, guys like Yun Hua, Yun Biu, and George Cadency as his, you know, his leading troop. But who would you rather see, you know, shine a little bit in this movie? That doesn't.
Well, I think, obviously, Chin Kalok is cut out far too soon. Even his death is just like a shot in the dark.
Heck,
the guy was celebrating his birthday.
Yeah, he was taking a piss in the rain, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's him.
And somebody else that dies with a bowel movement very soon.
But we just have to mention one amusing aspect about the English dub again. I assume it's done by the regulars at Golden Harvest at that time, and many people who have watched English dubs probably know these voices, and also know that they're a wild mixture of accents. And for some reason, I thought it was amusing that Yun Bo Ping, who plays granddad or uncle, he has a very thick British accent in the dub, which is just, you know, it's just amusing in that regard. And who is the guy with the sort of cowboy hat?
The custom-made cowboy hat, which suits his character to a T, is Charlie Chin. His character's almost identical to the one he played in the Lucky Star movies. Well, definitely the first one, where he was basically just a big love rat. Where he would try his luck on anything that's got cans. But in this case, they probably need a shower first.
I guess a commercial decision in a way to echo, you know, without looking it up, I guess at least one or the entire range of My Like a Star movies were successful ones, and therefore mm-hmm. they tried to transfer, you know, successful elements, but, you know, even though to us it doesn't really fit.
Yep, and we probably should give Peter Chan a mention here since he is about to bite the dust. Peter Chan, known all the way back to Fist of the Fury, as one of the guys who Bruce Lee forces to eat the paper. The sick man of China banner that he smashes.
Ah, basically, I didn't know that.
He's the tall guy.
Ah, okay.
When there's two people that offend him, there's a wee short, scrawny guy, then there's a big guy that almost has like a Chewbacca-type hair that covers his entire head.
Ah, okay.
And as well as, I think his other most notable roles is the bumbling sidekick in Fong Sayuk and almost playing an identical character before in The Prodigal Son, where he was the bumbling sidekick of Yimbu.
I guess his assistant or some sort. He looks the same in this in those films.
Yeah, I don't know whether they liked the idea to transfer it from one to the other, because obviously I doubt there's a connection between the two movies, unless he is the only connection between them.
Yeah, I don't think so. I guess, you know, someone liked the look of that character with the red nose
mm-hmm.
and
big gums,
and generally looking, you know, a bit retarded as well. But coming up here, I think many have heard Chinkalok speak of a stunt that didn't went wrong, but it was ill-timed in a way. The boat explosion, which by the way looks really, really good on film. It's a really cool shot. And in the teaser trailer, there actually is a different angle to that stunt where you can see the stuntman is basically really swallowed up by fire, which I don't know is the shot where Chinkalok got burned. But seeing as he landed in the water after the explosion, his burn damage wasn't that severe.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
it was more of a case of, now I'm trying to think what he says, it was the case of being in extreme heat into cold, which kind of made his skin puff up.
Right.
But then it just easily slid off as if he was taking off a silk glove.
Ooh.
But there was no permanent, there was no damage, it was just, like, his skin just puffed and came off. Now, I think this is, I'm pretty sure they've done two takes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, because in the teaser trailer, this here looks like the fire is quite far away from them, but the teaser trailer mm-hmm. looks quite more, the angle there looks quite dangerous.
Yeah.
So that might be the ill take, so to say. The teaser trailer also contains some behind-the-scenes footage, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a trailer that is not on the Hong Kong Legends DVD, actually.
Some shoddy housework there. And a very strange execution here. Flying out of the water. And I always found it really weird, the lighting for that shot of Samuel diving out of the water. Almost reminded me of an old advertising, I don't know, swimwear.
But speaking of Sam, I mean, it must be mentioned that he has not looked this good in a movie ever. I mean, he looks slim. He looks mm-hmm. in shape.
Yep, let's see. He did hire a personal trainer, I think. For some reason, he was quoted as Eddie Mayer.
Ah, yeah.
Which rings no bells to me.
Yeah, that's a Guaylo fighter, isn't it, Mike? Eddie Mayer?
He certainly yep. is.
Which has a cool face, but I don't know if he had any cool ability. I just know he was a bad guy in movies like New Kids in Town.
Maybe he knows how to diet. Samuel brought him on. But, yeah, basically Samuel wanted to slim down for the more serious role, so being a more serious role, he wanted to be slimmer so he could perform more acrobatic kicks and flips. But, yeah, after going on a strict diet of rice and chicken legs for 3 months, he actually only lost 30 pounds.
it's certainly noticeable.
Yeah, he does. Well, compared to films as Lucky Stars, Dragons Forever, he has changed definitely in this role.
And you know, after this film, he not only got bigger, but the perm entered Sammo. Close to the perm days. Here's an example why it's easy to dislike this film. There's no... I would be very surprised if someone said that they shed a tear during the death scene of Peter Chan Lung. You know, Sammo can be a decent dramatic director. He certainly can be a good dramatic performer, but I seriously hope that he wasn't thinking that he made the utmost, you know, dramatic action war drama story here. I mean, it's canned melodrama.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically stopped to... I've said too much already. That I dislike this.
And a strange scene, as you see Yin Wu Ping being almost more of a comedy, having a comical element to his character. But one of the best things to bring up is the relationship between these two brothers here, where it's probably this film, as we said, it is canned melodrama, but it does seem to bring out almost the best in Billy Lau. He gets the moment for us later on. I can't spoil this, because why are you listening to an audio commentary if you've not seen the movie before? You know that... Let's see. Name is Chan Kwong?
Yep, and know what you
mean. He gets obviously killed off later on in the movie, and I think that is just how his reaction is perfect.
I think I think his death is good, but I actually, you know, if you had seen Mr. Smart, I don't think you would say that Billy Lau's best dramatic performance came out of this film. I think it's personally, but you're entitled to your opinion. I think it's annoying. And should we care about the guy on screen here, Yung Biu? Is he worth talking about?
I guess so. Maybe one or two folk I want to hear about him. Him and his very stylish ice cream van.
It's definitely worth talking about the hair.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
So I think he's out-hairing Andy Lau.
Andy Lau has never been that daring, so yeah, I absolutely agree. That is putting your hairline on the line.
He's looking very 80s new romantic. Like a Chinese Simon Le Bon.
I was about to say, from some 80s band, either like a new wave synth group or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And basically, what is Yung Biu in this movie?
Pure class.
Indeed.
Okay, I was referring to his character. What is he doing here?
He's been importing Western goods and stuff like that, but you don't really get to know much until hell breaks loose. Then it's all about me. He being, you know, Mr. Ass Kicker of the film.
Yeah.
And that's enough.
Well, he's like what would have been known in the Second World War in Britain as a spiv. A kind of shady black marketeer who can get all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And here's some acrobatics performed here.
And bang.
Bang. Boom. Boom. Has anyone looked clearly at the film to see how much Yung Biu is doubling other people?
No.
I would guess a lot.
I mean, you were talking about Sammo slimming down to sort of perform some more acrobatics, but I guess was Sammo any good at like roundhouse kicks and stuff? Or that was left to like Yung Biu?
I think later on he was doubled for more kicks. I think it was something like Ridley Choi. Had to do moves for him and Skinny Tiger Fatty Dragon.
I was about to say, isn't Ewan a little bit too skinny to be doubling Sammo?
Well, he could always wear a couple of jumpers. And in the background now is veteran James Tien, who I think stood it the best in the days when he was working with Bruce Lee, because when watching, I think it was, must have been Big Boss, I thought his role there actually outshone Bruce Lee. I was wanting to find out more about this guy than I did at Bruce at one point. Like, who is Xu Shane?
And it could have been that way too.
Because
I think it's why
he's
they
a
know
backup
that,
in case.
Yeah, exactly. But he's very good in a film I saw recently that is out on VCD from a movie called The Chase.
Great
from 1971. Which is very good, and that is excellent wucha piece done by Wong Jing's dad, Wong Tin Lam. I recommend everyone to get that VCD of The Chase. It's an insanely cool film.
Yin Bu being the cocky cunt in this movie. But for a reason.
He's one of the guys that actually has a good English dubber, because he has sort of like a quick-paced dialogue at points. And the English dubber does quite well in that regard to sort of match his demeanor and stuff like that. Yeah, I guess it's about time to talk about the guy on screen here, Hangis Noor, or Dr. Hangis Noor, who, the late doctor, rather, more known for actually winning an Academy Award for his supporting role in The Killing Fields in 1984, which was a movie that echoed his real life quite severely. He was captured by the, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, the Khmer Rouge, during the takeover of Cambodia by that party, and he endured 4 years of torture and starvation, and even, you know, concealed his medical training in order to, escape execution, even to the extent of being unable to offer medical help to when his wife and child died in difficult premature labor. So, I mean, after he arrived to America and agreed to appear in The Killing Fields, which was a few years before Eastern Condors, I think it's very brave to echo that very savage experience, because The Killing Fields is a damn difficult film to watch. It really is. And he appeared in Eastern Condors. He appeared in Taiwan in one film, a war film called The Kinmen Bombs. And probably some work in America as a, maybe not leading actor, but, you know, a bit part player. And plays it more goofy in this film, partially. During this segment of Wu Ma, he plays it very goofy. He's the village moron, the village madman. The sad end story to Hangis Noor's life is that he was shot to death in front of his garage in 1996, which some thought was revenge by the Khmer Rouge, but in fact was he resisted a robbery attempt by some gang members, some street gang members, and unfortunately lost his life that way. And I admire him for taking on that role in The Killing Fields. I think it's still, you know, powerful film.
In some ways, Wu Ma kind of reminds me of Eric Tsang. In the fact that I kind of came to know of him from his comedy roles in films, or little comedy cameos, and a lot of the time playing quite, you know, silly characters. But actually, he's kind of a, you know, a bit of a Renaissance man as well, like Eric Tsang. I mean, being a producer and a director and a writer of a lot of classic films.
Studied under the best.
Yeah, well, co-directed quite a few films with Chang Che, like New Shaolin Boxers with Alexander Fu Sheng, and a lot of other films. In fact, didn't he direct Showdown at the Cotton Mill?
Yes.
Which is a much loved and previously very rare old school classic.
And also one of the films that people say is probably his only well-directed film is the Samo vehicle, The Dead and the Deadly. Where he also plays a role, and makes fun of it's Sammo that makes fun of Wu Ma in that film, but I think it's due to the fact that Wu Ma's character has a strange nose, and Sammo makes fun of that. I think that their interplay is very good. But the star of The Dead and the Deadly, in my opinion, is Lam Ching Ying.
the old Lam Ching Ying.
Exactly. Way before Mr. Vampire, he plays this extremely old, fragile Taoist priest that they basically have to wheel out of, you know, his bed to perform the rituals. And he's unfortunately, they don't go with that comedy angle for Lam Ching Ying, I think, in The Dead of the Deadly. But it just shows that, you know, the admiration for Lam Ching Ying should extend to, you know, his Mr. Vampire role and his comedy performing and his dramatic skills as well. And in Instant Condors, it's, I guess, more serious, but slight snippets of his great comedic timing. Mm-hmm. Especially in the beginning film, beginning part of the film.
Yeah, I think they're probably the only parts where he is a bit silly.
But it works. But it works. He nails it. I think he does.
It's just the expression on his face when he sits down and like just taps the driver to go on. That wasn't showing off.
And unfortunately, the English version didn't include that. So mm-hmm. It was all serious Lam Ching Ying in this film.
I'm sure Yuen Biu made that fall a lot more painful for himself than he needed to.
Yeah, he kind of folded over himself. Yeah. There.
Just going that extra mile.
That was a Yuen Biu doubling, I believe, when they shot at the door and Joyce Cadenzi made a spinning mm-hmm. thing there.
Joyce Cadenzi had basically no martial arts training at, and actually, unlike most female actresses nowadays, didn't have a dancing background. Because we all know the stories of Zhang Zi and Michelle Yao started out doing like ballet and dancing, then easily slipped into doing martial arts with obviously being awfully flexible towards their past history. But I think, was it Joyce Cadenzi actually received training on set from Dick Wei on this movie, and I think there was one after it as well, but the name escapes me.
Yeah, she did. Did she shoot Straight a few years after this? Which should be the other like big Joyce Cadenzi vehicle, the one directed by Corey Yoon. Which is a brutal film, I think. Yeah, she shoots Straight. So
has a cameo from Sammo in it as well towards the end. Would they be married by that point?
It's made in 1990. When did you say that they were married?
95.
Okay. Well after she had retired, I know she had a cameo in Mr. Nice Guy. But her last movie was The Raid in 1991.
Mm-hmm. Here comes the cavalry.
And speaking of Corey Yoon, we saw him briefly there. But it's easy to recognize Corey Yoon with the cigarette in his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Just get a nice payoff, gets a nice payoff. Towards the end, one of the few character deaths that I actually think is more felt and more, you know, thought out. The character death of Corey Yoon and Yuen Woo-ping.
I was just saying again, Charlie Chin with that stupid cowboy hat.
I just noticed it right during this viewing. Just like a stupid, you know. He has a different weapon in some scenes compared to the other guys, because they seem to have like a unified arsenal of weapons, but he has like a shotgun of some sort, so he looks especially cool according to him. It's not as extensive as Miracles in terms of, you know, cameos and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. What, hold that thought. Because right now, we're seeing anyway a scene that is actually cut from the British version of the film, there because of animal cruelty. It's a very good cut actually, because you don't notice it as such. But when Yuen Biu is questioned by Billy Lau, basically, what are you doing here? What have you done to be here? He talks about how much he has helped them, and he casually, while doing that, butchers a snake that is in a tree just to the left of him, and that little casual butchering of a snake is cut from the Hong Kong.
Sorry, I just have to love Charlie Chin's reaction there. It was almost like an anime type reaction where the face goes blank and just freezes.
But yeah, you won't get us engaging in an animal cruelty debate, not me anyway, because I have no feelings towards anything or anyone.
You're bitching a small kitten as we speak, aren't you?
No.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, that scene is available pretty much elsewhere besides the Hong Kong Legends DVD.
I just like how Yim Pugh's got just, he could just put his ear to the ground and he knows they're coming. Especially in the movie, they decide to play animal sound effects just before he does it.
Yeah, coming up on probably some stuff that is classic Hong Kong cinema in a way. The whole jungle bit here, so I guess I'll be quiet.
And on screen with Philip Kwok, briefly there.
Philip Ko.
Oh, my bad.
Very bad.
Nowhere to hang your coat, son. Now you makes the transition into almost Luke Skywalker type.
Elaborate on that.
Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't notice this at first, but the costume and, well, the clothes worn by Yim Pugh now resemble heavily the same on Luke Skywalker in one of the Star Wars movies. I can't say which because I'm not really a fan of the movies and only watched them once when they were re-released.
I would say the first, where he's in the desert and stuff. I
guess you think of New Hope when he's on Tatooine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that flew right over my head. Just like sandwich.
Admit it. You're a Star Wars geek like the rest of us.
Yeah. If I was, I would have said, but that shit ain't my cup of tea.
But are we, you know, in your opinion, guys, is some, you know, speaking of the action scenes in Eastern Condors, would you rate them, you know, top-notch Hong Kong cinema action? You know, is this, you know, some of the guys at the top of the game doing their very best work?
I would like to say yes, but I've got the feeling you guys are just going to turn against me and go, no. But I could easily watch the final fight, the last half hour of this movie, over and over. I just find it too much fun.
It's classic Sammo, modern Sammo at least, as in, you know, 80s and 90s films, where he teases you with some brief but high-quality bits of action throughout the film, and then saves pretty much all of it for some crazy, easily rewindable last 20-minute brawl.
Mm-hmm. It is really 20 minutes, yeah.
He does that on a regular basis in so many films.
You subtly sneaking in.
The bit with the coconut leaf, I guess, that turns into some sort of arrow, was, according to Sammo, something he watched the Filipinos on set doing. Apparently this film was shot in the Philippines for a few months. And he saw this and sort of asked, well, what is that? How do you do that? And incorporated it into the film, which is sort of an iconic shot, I think, the slow motion shot when he unleashes the first arrow.
I think it does look very cool.
Very, very cool. I mean again, the professional nature of this film, it looks so slick. And you got like Sammo, who is, you know, not the worst director in the world, but again, working with like a cinematographer like Arthur Wong just helps your movie immensely. And you can notice that when watching films like that Arthur shot, they're really more low budget Hong Kong films. There really is a creativity in there that he can do, you know, he can do his best work when working with small films as well, even though he's more known for the big films. You know, Purple Storm, Gen X Cops, Double Vision, the Taiwan American co-production, stuff like that. Floating Landscape, I think he shot and actually won an award for. So yeah, so you know, he made Ikin Cheng look good.
Mentioning people who don't get enough screen time from earlier, Phil Coe getting his ass whooped so easily by Sammo.
Yeah.
He's one of the all-time great screen fighters. Now you have to see the end of The Loot.
Now, this guy had have got a good pay for that.
Ouch.
Was that a full contact hit?
Oh, yeah.
It had to be.
There's not much way of faking that one. But Phil Coe is one of the all-time greats, and he should have had, you know, watching it going, oh, yeah, Sammo versus Phil. Oh, is that it?
Well, 10 seconds, and then that's it. Philip Coe also went into business with IFD, and Godfrey Ho and Richard Harrison, and did a bunch of films with not necessarily ninja films, but he appeared in like a few cut and paste films like Majestic Thunderbolt, and even to, you know, they sourced movies of course from elsewhere and added stuff to them themselves. Philip Kerr was in some of these movies originally and appeared in new footage himself in these cut and paste films, so he was a sort of a victim and contributor at the same time. It was fun for me anyway.
Again, Billy Lau showing his just being an arrogant prick towards his younger brother.
He's chewing scenery, Billy Lau. Mm-hmm. But that guy, his younger brother, on a personal note, Chung Kwok Kung, I believe, probably his best role in a movie that I spoke about on a podcast on Fire once, a movie called Cops and Robbers. He plays a rookie cop and has one of the most memorable scene in the film, this very violent film. Go on.
I just love Yimbu's almost organic hat here. Kind of looks like it's the zoomed up shot where you just see his head. It's like, oh look, a Cabbage Patch Kid. Come on.
This is the few scenes in the dub that actually works quite good for Yimbu's character. They dub him very well. Because that's a scene where the dialogue is sort of back and forth, flying, it's very fast. And the dubber did quite well. I usually don't notice stuff like that because I'm not a huge... You know, I'm not against English dubs, but I haven't fallen in love with them like many people have. I mean, I watched Drunken Master once and they say that dub is classic. I thought, well, yeah, it's funny at points, but, you know, I couldn't really see the magic in it. Then again, I guess you'd have to have some sort of first-hand experience of English dubs in a way to experience them first is kind of helpful, I guess. And many people speak of dubs for Sammo's movies and Jackie's movies as, you know, classics. I believe it's the Dragons Forever dub or the Wheels on Meals dub in English that people quote all the time.
Yeah, Wheels on Meals, I think, where it's UK release with Hong Kong Legends, it got almost redubbed again, more, I guess, a recent dubbing, which stirred up the shit. A lot of people were expecting the classic dub, where I think Richard was almost like sounded like a greasy Mexican.
and they speak about the scores being different at times also, for the better. I mean, a movie like Wheels on Meals probably works in English because it's set in Barcelona, and you know, what would you rather have? Spanish people speaking Cantonese to each other, or Spanish people talking English talking English with each other?
And I just loved Charlie Chin's second Yin Bu taking a slash there, but Charlie Chin's second attempt on... Damn it, I'm watching the movie too much. But I loved Charlie Chin's almost grass skirt poncho.
You do think he's very funny in this film, don't you?
Yeah.
However hard it is to admit it.
These are probably his... There is 3 points to this movie where I thought the guy had just done well. His attempts at Chan up going wrong, and then his final blaze of glory. He goes out fighting.
Could you imagine if they had cast Richard Ng in this film? What would have happened? Could you imagine him, you know, being Richard Ng, but also taking part in the war scenes?
I couldn't imagine that. But obviously, for people that seen The Deer Hunter, this is going to look awfully familiar. Almost to a T.
Yeah, it's not hard to draw comparisons to The Deer Hunter, I guess.
Obviously with the water cages, but this seems a more tame version. I'm pretty sure Deer Hunter was not swimming with rats and fish.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was up to his neck in it.
But still many people quote, you know, the Hong Kong Deer Hunter as, you know, Bullet in the Head being the Hong Kong Deer Hunter.
Yeah.
Which is probably more true in a way because that is, to be honest, these are disturbing enough sequences. But, you know, within this movie, which is not totally all over the place, but a little bit all over the place in terms of moods. I mean, Bullet in the Head Disturbs more as the sort of Hong Kong equivalent of Deer Hunter in a way. Mm-hmm. Even though the Lam Ching Ying beating here probably does, you know, hurt a bit.
I like how subtle that is. I'll just launch a stool at you. They won't notice that.
This movie, I mean, we two of us at least have agreed that it's an uneven film. Do you find yourself fast forwarding through this film whenever you want to watch it?
No. Well, in my opinion, I could just easily sit and watch it on rotation. In preparation for it, I've watched it twice already, and that was just yesterday. It doesn't bore me to no ends.
I never fast forward films anyway. I mean, you know, if you're gonna watch, if I watch a film, then I watch the whole film. Even if even something like Tom Yong-gung, aka Warrior King, which is absolute tripe, I'd still watch the whole film just for the action sequences and go through everything.
Even if it's a Hong Kong comedy that, you know, grates on you for 80 minutes but features like 10 minutes of hard-hitting action?
Yep.
You endure it?
Yeah. Many people have argued,
like, Jackie Chan movies, some of them are like that. You know, they're not the most well-made movies until the action kicks in. Which is true for some, not all. But yeah, Eastern Condors, I think... It's not always that I watch it in one go, but it's not a case of me fast-forwarding through it. I think it's, you know, it moves quite fast, though.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say it's a, you know, fairly well-paced film.
I mean, if I'm going to watch a film, I like having the context for the fights and everything.
Yeah.
The story that leads up to it.
Yeah, so even if I'm watching a Panna Ritikrai film, one of his Thai ones with no subs, awfully filmed, awfully acted, full screen, terrible picture, I'd still watch the whole thing because you want to know. Well, I want to know. I want to have the kind of the whole piece. Just watching action scenes on their own, I find gets a bit tiresome. But maybe that's just me. I know plenty of people who kind of take films, rip the action scenes, and put together a DVD of just all the fight scenes so they don't have to watch the film ever again.
Mm-hmm.
That would be tiring, I think. To have action on basically a loop.
Yeah, well, I'm guessing it's kind of like, you know, showing it to your mates, that kind of thing.
Yeah. But this is a movie that you could easily show, I guess, a new viewer that wants to experience Hong Kong action. It's not the worst choice.
No, certainly not.
I mean, it's not, you know, it's slightly wild, but not as wild as some Hong Kong movies are. So, you know, it's no rape 1 minute, laugh out loud comedy scene next, shootout, sword fight. You know, it's not mixed up like that.
And on screen there, we've got the scheming Ha Chi Chun.
Yep, we actually received I think it was Best Newcomer nomination at the 1988 Hong Kong Film Awards for her performance.
She's actually a performance. Considering that category is sort of, if you're new, you automatically entered into that category.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why Edison Chen somehow won that award for his performance in Gen Y Cops. Just because he was new.
So what you mean, Jordan Chan's not really that talented?
Jordan Chan is talented. Edison Chen is not talented.
Jordan Chan also receiving the Best Newcomer Award.
You know, as I said, this girl actually puts in a performance, which is, mm-hmm. you know, would make sense to sort of be nominated in that category. And Jordan Chan, whatever movie he was nominated for when he was new, I don't know, but I have nothing bad to say about Jordan Chan.
Mm-hmm.
I have much bad to say about Edison Chen.
Although I think he would have deserved that award, Edison Chen, if it was Best American in a Hong Kong movie.
Best,
sure, then give him the award. Give him two.
Only if Daniel Wu wasn't in the running. So Edison,
thank you.
See my noise I made earlier. was Edison Chen's was pretty good in Dog Bite Dog.
Dog Bite Dog, yeah.
Yeah, but we're talking about Gen Y Cops.
What up, dog?
I mean, he was more American than Paul Rudd.
Speaking of Simon Le Bon.
Some ruthless killing.
What was that? Simon Le Bon, ruthless killer?
No, no, Paul Rudd and Simon Le Bon, that hairdo in Gen Y Cops.
Yeah. I think there's something libelous going on here.
I think most of the acting she does is all through the eyes. Takes a good look left, look right. There you go, you can't, she's evil.
She has got some nice facial expressions. I think she's actually pretty good in this film. Mm-hmm. You can see why she'd get some kind of award nomination, I think.
Didn't do too much. You know, for some reason I tend to, in a movie or two, to confuse her with Pauline Wong. She looks a bit like Pauline Wong at times. Can't really quote the movie that everyone knows Pauline Wong was in, but the one movie is Her Vengeance.
Mr. Vampire as well.
Yeah, exactly. She plays the ghost that Chin Si Ho is under the spell of.
Mm-hmm. And I think... Christ, forgetting the name here of the traitor girl. I think she was almost unrecognizable in Aces Go Places 5. She played, I think, Sam Hoy's assistant.
Ah, okay. A few years after this.
Yep. And the reason why all children in this movie should have been shot at the beginning.
Yeah, there is a high quotient of badass little kids in this film, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. I just want to smack them in the pass. Some moments like this just made me so angry. Like, bamboo that little kid, come on. No. Fuck guilt.
And here's some overacting. I mean, there's a possibility of, you know, Billy Lau doing well, I think. There's an interesting scene in a short while where Sammo is comforting Billy Lau. And there you see two schools of acting there, because Sammo plays it really well. He just basically expressionless, but he's taking care of him, while Billy Lau is just, you know, he is sad, of course, and he's allowed to cry a bit, but he's so over the top, and you can't really feel it. But you know, it shows the strength of Sammo in that scene, and you know.
Also, eagle-eye viewers might have spotted a dead man taking a swallowing then, just on the riverbank scene.
I didn't notice it. Things to watch next time.
When we do this commentary again, just to...
Take two.
to visit that particular scene. Yeah, this is a nice scene, I think. It's still... You know, both are pretty calm... Billy Lau plays it, you know, a bit more subtly. And Sam hadn't done really too much drama up until this point, I think. And it was really the year after this, in 1988, where he starred in Painted Faces, where he got his due as a dramatic actor and won rightfully an award for his performance in Painted Faces, playing his own Sifu, his own opera teacher in real life.
Lam Ching Ying here, for those that don't know, passed away in, I think, what was the year, 1997, due to liver cancer. But as you've just mentioned, Ken, Lam Ching Ying was probably more notable in the serious role in Painted Faces.
Yeah, he's very good in that. He plays, plays a struggling stuntman.
Who's probably taken one too many bumps.
Yeah, it's a very, very felt performance. Mm-hmm. God, it's a good movie. That, unfortunately, that does lie with Shaw Brothers, Painted Faces, but it's not come out yet on DVD. Mm-hmm. I think it was scheduled, but Painted Faces never made it onto DVD. Just such a shame. Such a good film. And also for reference performances for Lam Ching Ying, check out The School on Fire.
Yes.
Ringo Lam film, he plays a cop in that. Mm-hmm. So, sort of a cop that basically gets fed up with the system too, a system that can't really, you know, stamp on the actual hooligans of our world. So
was Lam Ching Ying ever a really big star? I'd obviously know he's like very popular, and obviously in Mr. Vampire films were very popular, but in Hong Kong, was he ever like a major star?
I never got the impression, no.
No, me neither.
I just wished he was then.
the thing was, I think he was playing it safe to an extent. I mean, he did some reference parts that were noticed by critics, I guess, but seeing as he starred in so many like hopping vampire films and being the Taoist priest and stuff, I don't think...
I think he was applying more to a selected audience.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that's the equivalent of him, you know, being a star and those being like star vehicles. But apparently he was quite comfortable in that role, and that being said, he did that role very well so many times, you know, despite it being reruns. But I have a weak thing for Lam Ching Ying, you know, as many people do when he starts ghost busting in his way. I mean, there's a reason they call him, I guess, the Peter Cushing of Hong Kong in a way. Lame comparisons, but anyway.
This is basically Ha Chi Jan's cover being blown. Which, this is the point that surprised me when it comes to, right, Joyce is going to kill her. Like, that's fine with me, but the more timid actress will we see here? Bang.
That is brutal.
And now we get the introduction of the Giggling General.
Who is this?
Mike?
It's the mighty Yuen Hua. Who's possibly... I mean, I think on a par with Yuen Biu in terms of physical ability.
Sorry. I'm putting sound to the movie.
Billy Chow and Yakuzuki Karata here on the left.
Sorry, Mike, go ahead.
Yuen Hua are on a par with Yuen Biu in terms of physical ability, I think, fighting and acrobatics. I think he could have been a really big star, save for one thing, which might seem a bit harsh, but I think it's a valid point, is he's actually quite weird looking. He hasn't got any kind of leading man looks at all. No. He looks a little bit weird, which makes him kind of... Well, let's see. Yeah. You can imagine, like, casting directors getting the photos through. So let's have a look at this one. Yep, he looks like a baddie. Call him in. You know, he's going to be weird sidekick or evil general. That kind of thing. Hired goon.
Yuen Hua actually played a similar role 3 years earlier, actually casted as a robotic killer in the Golden Harvest flop, The Final Test.
Wasn't that like a sci-fi flick or something? I heard
it. It has to have been if it had robotic killers.
Well, not necessarily. It's a Hong Kong film. Could be a wuxia for all I know. Swordplay film. The one thing that Yuen Hua has done well outside of being bad is he's actually transferred well into comedies, and you know, obviously Kung Fu Hustle being a good example. But I've always had a good soft spot for the movie Legend of the Dragon with Stephen Chow, where he plays Stephen Chow's master in Sifu.
Yeah.
He's very funny as the stoic master, and very funny as the master, you know, when he travels to the big city and doesn't really know how to in the big city. He's a fish out of water.
Yeah.
And doesn't know how to use the toilet. And, you know, it sounds like, you know, easy humor, lame humor, but Yuen Hua sold those moments very well in Legend of the Dragon, which is coincidentally one of my favorite Stephen Chow movies. The Kung Fu Snooki movie, if you will.
Yeah,
featuring Jimmy White.
Yes. Directed by Danny Lee, actually.
So I don't think Yuen Hua...
Doesn't he make an appearance in the movie?
Danny Lee, no. I think he's in the credits, in the end credits, you can see him, but that's behind the scenes footage.
Oh, I'm mistaken with Long Kar Yan, who exchanges the beard for a head of hair.
I think that is true, yes.
Who plays, is it not his cousin? Cousin from the city, more like.
I think so. He looks sort of like a triad-like, in a way.
Yeah.
He had the minor bling that Hong Kong triads usually have, which is a very little chain. that usually means you're a trier. And if you have a big phone as well, sure sign.
I was about to say, I think you and Wire had a chance, possibly. I trace his chance of being a leading man or a big star back to a Shaw Brothers film from 1980 called Coward Bastard. Now, if anybody's seen that, it's a kind of... it's a Shaw Brothers attempt at doing some kind of Golden Harvest kung fu comedy. You know, Jackie Chan-like.
Mm.
And it's got Meng Yuan-man and Yuan-wah. And Yuan-wah is kind of the serious character, but he's one of the two leads. And it feels a little bit like... It's like a presentation of a potential new star, I think. He gets plenty of opportunities to show off just crazy acrobatics and fighting skills. And he gets more of a stoic leading man kind of role. And he does it very well. But there's one problem. Yeah, yep. IVL released it.
Okay.
There is one problem, though. The film is absolute shite. I mean, absolute shite. It's really hard watching. I mean, he's totally impressive in it. But I think, you know, that came out tanked. And I don't recall... I mean, obviously... talking about the Stephen Chow films he appeared in, but I don't really recall him having a role after that as a good guy where he's been as prominent.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of got stuck with bad guys after that, which he's very good at.
Yeah, I don't know if it took like Kung Fu Hustle to sort of turn Yuan-wah's career around a bit.
Then he kind of went into the wrong direction.
Yeah, he started starring in Wong Jing films, Kung Fu Mahjong, mm-hmm. 1, 2, and 3.
But Wilson, yeah, did give him some good... Oh, you done quite well in Dragon Tiger Gate. Like, he was playing, obviously, a serious character, but he done one of the best performances in that film.
I remember one film that where Yuan-wah again was back in comedy territory, and a movie which I absolutely hated was the Korean film Hero,
mm-hmm.
which suffers from the fact that it's a very good film when serious and gory and absolutely marvelously violent, and then there's like a Wong Jing-esque comedy part of the film that unfortunately Yuan-wah is very much part of and director Korean. Despite it being a remake, I think, of Boxer from Shandong. Shang Tung.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Yeah.
I think that movie is unfortunately a missed opportunity hero.
I'd say Yuan-wah's best role is Police Story 3, aka Super Cop.
Hmm.
I think he's excellent in that film.
Oh, by the way, I must mention a movie that I just remember that Yuan-wah was in where he sends up his sort of bad guy image in a movie called A Big Deal, which is a totally manic comedy with Moon Lee and Yukari Oshima and Sibel Hu. It's if you can stand that film, then you're basically a Hong Kong cinema fan for life, because it's potentially very annoying, but it's extremely funny too. And Yuan-wah has very colorful suits in the entire film and plays basically the character he usually plays, but he's on board with sending it up in a way. It's a wild film, the big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a big deal.
I just want to go back a tiny bit as well, as the running question of actors who didn't get enough screen time. Yasuaki Kurata. One for old school fans. But he is not only a brilliant martial artist, but really charismatic actor as well.
Yeah.
Capable of a really good stoic kind of stoic roles, hard nuts, baddies, goodies. Also, very good at comedy. I seen him Return the Deadly Blade. Plug.
Also, so.
But he gets like about 10 seconds screen time in this. It's crazy.
Well, he does get the good fight in the end, though.
Yeah, possibly, but I don't know. A little bit wasted for my liking.
I think it makes an impression because of that shot where he's being kicked under the shin. Or mm-hmm. or is that someone else that Yuan-wah kicks?
possibly a double. I could remember him being doubled on Twinkle Twinkle Lucky Stars. But I know it's the strangest shot here of Samo screaming but with his mouth shut.
Yeah. Just take all the fun out of the film by pointing out that stuff.
Shut.
And
there's always one thing I noticed at the beginning, like, how weird. Then I tried the original language, that was the same.
Coming up here is probably these, you know, Koryun or Yuma Ping doesn't necessarily go, you know, do much stuff in the film, but I think based on their character design, you know, with the cigarette and the headband there, and the fact that they die a dual death in a way, I think they do well. And there's a, again, I screened the English dub quite recently, yesterday, as a matter of fact, and the dialogue about just before they're about to bite the bullet, they say, "What color is the sky?" Koryun says, "So it's blue," because they're talking about whether or not they're going to hell or heaven, and Yuma Ping says, because he's lying under a truck, "No, it's black." And the way it's delivered in the English dub is so haunting, which has surprised me. It really creeped me out.
Well, earlier on, we're told, well, you're given the impression that Yin Wu Ping is sort of a deep character. When they asked him, "How will you spend your money?" He said, "I'll give half to my daughter and half to my wife." He's like, "Oh, you're married." He's like, "A man doesn't need to have a wife to have a daughter." Like, that's far too deep for me, Grandpa.
He's probably far too deep for this film, too. I think that is the deepest character, in a way.
Yeah.
But again, it's... What it is an action film. It's an entertaining action film, and that's all it is. And I mean, you can deconstruct it as much as you want, but I won't ever take that away from Easter Condos. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't. I mean, it's well past, what is it, 21 years old this year. I mean, it's a movie that still stands, holds its own, stands up.
Mm-hmm. And actually, looking at it with both Koryun and Yin Wu Ping both having this similar fate, both of them have went on to have similar careers in the US. Koryun being a big action director for movies like Transporter, X-Men, Lethal Weapon 4, Kiss of the Dragon, Yin Wu Ping's been involved with the Kill Bill series, The Matrix. Both of them's had their fair share of success in the United States doing action choreography. Although maybe Corey Yun's leaned a little bit off the road, but
yeah, well, Transporter movies were European, and I mean, he's not been mainstream work constantly. He's not been the name in the advertisement like Yuma Ping has managed to, you know, he's managed to become an advertisement tool in a way.
Aye.
I think this is a nice touch with the fact that he's talking about, you know, what did your friend die of? He died of lung cancer. And he's been carrying around this cigarette forever. I think it's a nice touch.
In come the enemy.
We're just watching the movie. Which you shouldn't. Which you shouldn't when you're doing a commentary.
This is the scene that you have to have in every war film. Which is, you know, the guys who know they're going to die putting on an incredibly heroic last stand.
Yeah, this movie's got a couple of them.
And there's a couple of guys in one shot that everyone recognizes, but they're gone as quickly. Some nice shots of the tank here, very atmospheric.
it's waving to the camera.
Exactly. Hello. Mom, hello.
And obviously Yin Wu Ping's been involved with everything from directing Snake and Eagle Shadow up to, heck, nowadays he's, can't remember the last thing he worked on. Must have been, I've blanked it. Anyway,
well,
here's some overreacting from Yin Wu.
at least the Kill Bill films. I was thinking about the stunt earlier with Sammo, or maybe not Sammo, but the stunt where his character jumps from a mountain
off
onto
the
truck.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't he talk about that stunt partly in the interview? He actually did it in a, you know, or at least some variation of it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that, Stu?
Vaguely.
But you know, it looks like whoever did it looks like a wicked stunt. You know.
Yeah.
It's not like they have like CGI erased, like wires and stuff. It looks like someone jumped.
Had to time it to a T, and if it went wrong, it went seriously wrong.
Yeah, imagine if he still landed on his feet. Imagine would that would have gone to his back.
Mm-hmm.
But did you mention that Ridley Choi was involved in this somehow?
No, that was in Skinny Tiger Fighting Dragon, where he doubled for Sammo.
Because there you have a stuntman that is fucking insane. Ridley Choi. And many people may have seen a clip from the movie No Regret, No Return, which Ridley Choi starred in and directed. There's two or three insane stunts in that, but one that involves him being hit by a car while riding a motorcycle, and he basically flies in the air like a rag doll. And it's insane. It's kind of on par with the stunt Sammo does in Pantyhose Hero, where he gets hit by the car.
And obviously this is us made our transition from the Philippines to Hong Kong. All this stuff here was constructed on a big ass set on Golden Harvest, where it is almost compared to like a James Bond finale, the scene with the giant missiles in the backgrounds and just half a dozen soldiers just being wasted left, right and centre. And almost even this music here reminds me of the Goonies.
Maybe it is from the Goonies. I mean, I'm sure the composer didn't, you know, do all the music. Probably choose some.
But let's see. I have nothing to say here. This is the point where I could switch off and watch the rest of the movie. But this is obviously the point where Lam Ching Ying's character unveils the true plot of why they're here. And of course, the gorillas object. This is the point where it's like, Sammo should have fucked that bitch up earlier on. How dare she shoot Lam?
Oh, but he will. He will. This is the point, though, that it can't get any more classic than this.
Mm-hmm.
The various showdowns between people, even though you get moments like, you know, really good action performance just getting killed really easily.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something you shouldn't talk about, but we're here to talk about it anyway. And we should talk about it, we shouldn't just leave it quiet, but...
And what you notice here is the fact that, what's it, Dr. Hang S-Nyor is, like, if you watch these scenes, evidently he isn't in any of them. From all these shots you see here, there will be the one shot where you see him being killed off, but he was only on set in the Philippines. Whenever he was needed in the scenes here for Hong Kong, he was actually doubled.
Yeah, you notice that in some moves where people just curiously go away.
Mm-hmm.
And reappear at the end of the big action finale.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the case with Maggie Cheung at the end of Police Story, because she got hurt? She basically just... it's not even her. I think it's the body double.
Is that Police Story 2?
Police Story 2, yeah.
Gets clocked by one of the falling... metal kind of shelving unit things, doesn't she?
Yeah. So she's not even actually in the final shot of that film. It's someone shot from the back.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess she was out from that. So
now,
you know, sorry.
point here I love where Lam Ching Ying's gun, one bullet, two people. He says, I want that gun.
Special magic bullets.
And now, Spitters. Charlie Chin getting his... Like, if I'm taking you out, I'm bringing some folk with me.
Now this is quite cool.
Mm-hmm. The music and everything was perfect. In the slow motion, being shot to shit. Shot.
Is there a specific fight or short bout or long bout in this finale that you guys like to highlight? You know, specifically, is there something like... Because when I watch this finale, it's so much to take in. Mm-hmm. During one viewing, during the second viewing, third viewing, fourth viewing, is there something that is so insane that it's even easy to miss, you think? I mean, talking about acrobatic stunts.
The things I just enjoy the most about this bit was just the Yimbu's two fights, well, his fight against both Yakuza Ikarata and Dick Wei. They turned out to be my favourite fights in it, but even it's just the shot looking down when you see Yimbu's boot being introduced to, like, Karata's jaw, even the little trampoline bit here. Like, just, the guy is too good. And I like his excuse of being excused from the final fight, given Samo's chance.
So what do you think, Mike, about are any standouts in this finale?
Well, the problem with this kind of film is it's a war film, so, you know, it's going to have guns, and guns are the enemy of a kung fu film. So you've got to do everything you can, there we go, out of bullets, kick gun away, everything you can to get rid of the bullets, so it's just like, you know, shoot, plenty of hired goons come rolling in, shoot, bullets out, then we can get down to some proper fighting. And it's, in terms of best fights, yeah, I'm kind of with Stu. Anything
with Xiaohu's exit here?
Anything with Yuen Buin. But then, this is kind of gathering together some of my favourite screen fighters of all time in one studio lot for a proper tear-up. So Kurata, old-school badass, Yuen Hua, Yuen Bu, two of the best, most acrobatic fighters. Samo, who's... possibly one of the hardest looking.
I just have to say the Lam Ching Ying death there, I think that's widely disturbing. I really think that. I think that's stark as you can come. Just dies. Yeah, sorry, Mike.
Oh. The way he flops down is pretty nasty.
But fucking awesome. Yimbu's showing that he can still just kick like a madman.
Would that be Ching Ka Lok taking that whooping? Or maybe
it'd have to be a case of freeze framing it.
It's certainly not Kurata.
Nah. Unless he decided to age lose a couple years.
Yeah.
You never know what could happen after a kick in the chin.
Well, at least this is not a film where you notice the doubling as, you know, it's not as obvious as like in Righting Wrongs where Cynthia Rock turns into Yuen Bu all of a sudden.
That is genius, that is.
I love this overshot.
That's definitely, that definitely looks like Ching Ka Lok fighting to me. That doubling bit there.
And probably getting kicked in the nads as well.
That's a bit that I, you know, when you say that, you know, it's not like I don't believe you, but I quite admire your, you know, that you can notice stuff like that, that you have noticed certain characteristics of stuntmen, that it's possibly them and stuff. I mean, I wouldn't know what to think, what to look for in a Ching Ka Lok move, or anything like that.
You just get used to it. It's like, I guess, when you start off, well, I started off not noticing the doubling, but then once somebody points one out to you, or, you know, Ching Ka Lok doubled for Jackie Chan in this scene, then it starts to become really easy to spot a certain stuntmen.
It becomes a little guessing game.
Reappearing in Sammo and Jackie Chan films all the time. I mean, Ching Ka Lok's a great doubler for Jackie because they're about the same size and he moves incredibly like Jackie Chan anyway when fighting.
Great moment here. Da.
I mean, that's the magic of Yung-Byu in this scene. He's so good at doing the light moments, as well as, you know, being the action performer. So he's very funny. And, you know, despite being sort of the I wouldn't say underrated, but underappreciated third brother, mm-hmm. because he didn't get as much exposure. I mean, Sammo did as much as he could, at least in this movie. Ooh. So, ow.
See, I think Joyce Godenzi definitely deserved her nomination for Best Supporting Actress.
Mm-hmm.
Especially even if it's just for this.
Yeah, well, it's not. You know, it's not easy to do intensity, and I guess certain things look easy in automatic video. You know, you have to sell the fact that she's, you know, fighting as a rebel fight and stuff, and I guess that's it's definitely enough within the Hong Kong cinema climate to actually be nominated in that regard. It's not a what up dog performance. It's far from it. But Yung Hwa didn't need any doubling.
Not at all. Just look at him go.
And speaking of doubling, I think we need to talk about the Miss Hong Kong 1987 show. So I'll let you guys talk about what the Eastern Condors connection is to that show.
Well, basically, as you said, the Miss Hong Kong show, where practically near enough the entire cast appeared at the show, brought out full in character, and brought just, it was all infused with a Pekin Opera light effect, but still following like along the lines of the film. Yung Hwa coming on set, not just walking, but say about 30 flips. And the thing is, he looked like limp when doing it. It just like he kind of flopped to it.
He just front flips without using his hands.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane. Crazy. It is. The only bad part about that performance is that they bring out Billy Lau and Chung Kuo Kung, and they obviously can't do anything but banter and do comedic shtick.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, even without subtitles, you know, it's a good thing they brought out everyone, but obviously that show runs a bit long because they feel the need to include all the cast members. So I mean, it would be enough to sort of focus only on the Peking Opera bit, but everyone in Eastern Condor's costume and war gear and stuff. It's an amazing thing to look at. Amazing archive footage.
I don't know if it was missed a little bit there, but we'd just seen Billy Chow fighting Sammo.
Sammo.
who Billy Chow regularly appearing as a hard nut, a baddie guy at the end of films, especially with Sammo.
It's a good kick here too, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Brilliantly in, I think most memorable, like Pedicab Driver. He's excellent in that. And
had a big role in Fist of Legend.
Of course, yeah. That'd probably be the film most people.
And Miracles, and also.
Mm-hmm. Yakuza Kara also had a really good part in Fist of Legend.
More of an acting part, that.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it true that Kurata did the majority of his films in Hong Kong rather than Japan?
Yeah, I believe so.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't think is sort of sensational or anything, but it's notable. He maybe had been imported, but decided to stay on, and even appeared in So Close a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Wait, I think he's just got the full package. Excellent on-screen fighter, but also a well-rounded actor as well.
Of course, the action scenes for this film, with obviously a cast of so many great, like, stuntmen turned actors with all their opera backgrounds, it's no surprise in knowing that there's at least half a dozen action directors for this movie. Everyone from Sammo Hung, Corey Yoon, Lam Ching Ying, and Xiao Ho.
I mean, it's hard to believe Sammo would just, you know, have a fight like that with Yuen. Hwa. And then Yuen says, shakes his head like, no more. And Sammo goes, yeah, right. Fair enough, I did kick your ass pretty badly.
Hi, Billy.
Yeah, finish him off. He's a weasel.
And the all-important question, which we, you know, we have been complaining about, the people that were left to die and the people that lived. But as someone wrote in the prep for this audio commentary, who would you have you know, predicted beforehand would end up being the survivors of this piece. Mm-hmm. And one of them is Billy Lau. I mean, the most annoying tit in the film. He sits down and cries. Oh, look at me, I solved everything all of a sudden.
I really expected Lam Ching Ying to be, even if you were just told three people were going to live, I would have thought Lam Ching Ying, but he ate that bullet.
And come to think of it, I haven't focused that much on the finale, and certainly not on Billy Lau. Where was he during the finale?
I'm guessing he was going to plant explosives, because as you can see here, they're all planted.
Yeah.
And Lam Ching Ying only manages one or two before being killed off.
Oh, so he basically reappears because, as far as I can know, he doesn't appear in between all the Billy Chow throughout the fights.
Yeah, he disappears at the beginning for the big scrap.
After being shot in the leg by one of the gorillas.
Some fairly advanced special effects for Hong Kong cinema coming up, some miniature work. Some maybe not blue screen, but exactly, maybe not blue screen, but rear screen projection and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's considering it's 20 years ago, it's all right. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, it's embarrassing the way Hong Kong cinema did this. It's all right. And probably a large special effects budget for a Hong Kong movie of that time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Yuen Biu, Sammo, and Billy Lau. What happened to them?
Where are they now?
Find out in the sequel that has not yet been made.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see.
See, that is that Sam... actually a human body's falling down a waterfall?
Yeah.
It really is. Mental. Could have easily just dropped some dummies off there, surely.
Well, they did drop some dummies up there. Apparently. Because that was not needed. You're right.
That's just going, you know, taking an unnecessary extra step for that one tiny shot, is to throw real people off the end of it.
They probably just woke up Chin Carlock and was like, you fancy this? Aye, no bad. Off you go. They got him to do it three times.
Even though Sammo might have a reputation of being a hard director to work with and demanding one, I mean, his movies speak for themselves in terms of end results. And I mean, this is a good example. Mm-hmm. Even if he was only hard on Joyce Cadenzi to make it look good, I mean, it paid off.
Paired it with Dick Wyer as well, who's famous for not pulling his punches and making quite a lot of contact with people when fighting them. Mm. So I'm sure she had a laugh filming that.
Head up with the most dangerous fucker on the planet.
Method acting or something, I think, probably.
And I just like this last shot here with the... Go on, where is it? The...
Presumably back in the Philippines, or? I
don't know. Maybe.
Or Canada? Or Hong Kong? I don't know.
Ah, there we go.
Real helicopter.
Superimposed. Going the wrong way.
And unfortunately, no outtakes. They're just highlights from the film, which, you know, which you never really know. Sometimes you get Hong Kong movies that mixes these like real shots from the movies and the odd behind the scenes, you know, mishap and stuff. Mm-hmm. But these tend to sometimes run extremely long just because they have to fit like a famous person singing the main theme and stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know who sung this main theme, but it's quite alright. And in the trailer, there's actually, at the very end of the trailer, the entire cast is gathered up and is basically singing the main theme. It's kind of a We Are the World moment, only without the headphones. Mm-hmm. It's kind of cool, actually. Everyone is gathered up, so Yuen Wai is singing with Sammo and everyone's, you know, pals. It's kind of a nice moment in the trailer. Mm-hmm. To a very good and suitable song, and also the score for this film I thought was very good. One of their specific cues, the dun 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 dun, that is a seriously cool score.
So yeah, I think we're coming to the end of the show, guys. But Eastern Condors, thumbs up or thumbs down?
Thumbs up as an action film. Mm-hmm. Thumbs down as a drama.
Oh, I give it like a thumb halfway between, kind of a thumb horizontal?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
No, you know, it's not exactly a terrible film or anything. It's a decent watch, but I wouldn't say it was one of my favourite Sammo films.
I would happily return to it, though.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I guess that's it. This is the end of our first audio commentary. Might be our last, but you never know. I enjoyed myself.
Yeah, I don't think Bay's going to be sweating.
Right, well, I'm Stuart Sutherland.
Kenneth Bolson.
Mike Banner.
Catch you later.